Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to another episode of Voices for Excellence. I am your host, Dr. Michael Connor, CEO and founder of the Agile Evolutionary Group, and of course, the proud host of VFE. And today's guest, we had an S at the end because we brought in, I call them the EdTech Czars cross country. We got the New York connection. We got the California LA connection here, but I tell you, two of the greatest minds in the EdTech space and also understand the education ecosystem. I would like to introduce Brett Rohwer and Jacob Cantor from EdLit. Again, these two brothers, I tell you, you know, anything pertaining to AI, anything pertaining to generative AI, anything pertaining to AI in education, it doesn't matter whether you're in California or in New York. Brett or Jacob got their hands on it, and these are two individuals I call education confidants because, of course, when we talk about, you know, AI and education, when we talk about LLMs and generative models, these are the two individuals I go to all the time. So Brett and Jacob, wait, this is a twofer, man. We, you know, my viewers got to pay for this now. How you doing, Brett and Jacob? Good to see you.
Same. Thank you so much. Honor to be here. Dr. Connor, cannot wait to discuss all the things with you today.
Same. So excited to be with both of you guys. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday, indeed. And I'm going to open this up because, again, I want my viewers, the VFE viewers in the audience, to know who Jacob and Brett, who they are. We see you all across the country, embedded in the education landscape in a variety of different measures and a variety of different approaches. But each of you, I consider, like I say, domain experts in this area, in the ecosystem. But what excellence and equity song describes the diverse work you guys are underscoring in the education industry? And Jacob or Brett, whoever, it's a toss-up. Doesn't matter who goes.
I'm happy to go first. I sent Brett a ping yesterday with, so growing up a SoCal kid, right? Like being born in 1984, coming to America from a different country, you know, being a latchkey kid, right? Like I grew up a hip hop kid. So as I was kind of thinking and reminiscing on, you know, what song came to mind, I'm going to date myself here, but Warren G's Regulate.
Woo!
You remember the memorable call in the beginning of the song?
I know.
So, you know, at the beginning of the call when it goes regulators mound up, you know, like as I was thinking about, you know, education and making an impact and really like, who do I go to when there's a new project, right? Like it resonated so much in the ed tech space where when there's work to be done, when there's a project that comes on where it's time to make a big impact, you know, I rely on a core group of trusted colleagues who are always ready to collaborate on projects and make an impact. And of course, Brett being one of them, yourself being another, right? Like that song just always hits and gets you in a great mood. B, just now kind of reflects as I think about like ed tech in itself.
Jacob, I'm not going to lie to you. I thought you were going to bust out some like Ice Cube, NWA. So, but you stood with the West Coast Warren G regulators. Yes. Brett, are we going to bring it to New York?
I mean, if we want to feel really good, obviously, you know, you got Juicy by Biggie, but actually the song that makes me feel the best, and I'm very fortunate. I have a 3-year-old and a 6-year-old, and I just introduced them to this song. And I just was in Ohio for an AI summit yesterday, introduced this song to somebody. They had a convertible. We're driving in Cleveland. And I said, this is my song. Like if there's one sunny song that really connects with me from time of being a college student through education and now with AI is Move On Up by Curtis Mayfield. No song fills my cup more than that one. And it just takes me back to different places and times. And right now with education, the idea that we got to move on up, like we're doing this together. There's rough roads ahead and like, we really need to push. You got to have faith. You got to work together. You got to believe in it, but you got to make sure you're never giving up on it and you just keep on moving. So that's the song that I really, that really aligns with where I'm at right now and what makes me excited about education and especially the role AI can play in addressing inequities.
Absolutely, Brett. And I tell you, between your answer, Brett, and Jacob's answer, You see a lot of cross-referencing where we have to do this together. This work has a high level of conciliation that needs to be need to be focused on the work. A lot of intentionality, like you said, we're going to have to move on up. But going back to Jacob's answer, regulators, we got to mound them up. So true with that. And especially when we talk about AI and education. And Brett, this question is directly for you. Jacob, we're going to go to you for the next question. But Brett, you know, your work has taken you across the country. And as you just stated, you were just at a recent event in Ohio working with state officials as well as district level leaders. But experiencing this paradigm shift in AI, specifically when we talk about generative tools, they're starting to disrupt traditional modes of the operating model in education. Now, from a national perspective, Brett, from a national perspective, in the context of your expertise, AI and education, how should leaders or how should we in the ecosystem approach this reimagination process? One, and in the second, what are next in class practices that are working that you have seen across the country and that can be underscored in learning organizations across the country and beyond?
Yeah, excellent. So many facets I'm about to dig into, and just a great question in general. Whenever I'm going to speak about AI, I'm going to make sure that I'm giving credit where it's due and putting respect on the right people's names. So first of all, the work I'm doing in Ohio, I'm super grateful. I'm getting to work with a really innovative group that starts right at the top of the governor's office, right down to amazing teachers and everyone in between that makes education possible. So what's been really unique about Ohio is the governor and lieutenant governor, they focus everything on the idea of how are we serving today's students for, upskilling them so that Ohio's economy remains this really innovative economy. And I'm coming into this, by the way, I'm by no means an expert on Ohio politics or education. This is really a crash course over the last year. But what I have seen is just like bipartisan, get the work done. Let's build policy that makes sense. Let's bring together experts from across all different perspectives and backgrounds, rural, urban, suburban schools. But what I've seen that's been most important there is they're really trying to be strategic about, okay, if we're going to introduce an AI toolkit, now we got to bring accompanying guidance to educators, right? We can't say, here's your toolkit, now you know what to do with these tools. That's not how education works. It's not how AI is going to work. When we talk about reimagining, there's a couple people I really want to shout out. One is this amazing organization called Schooljoy. So yesterday, Schooljoy presented. They're founded by Ian Zhu. He did a panel with two current superintendents, and they talked about how by using Schooljoy, they brought curriculum costs down 87%. By using a learning tool that allows you to personalize student learning, that allows you to create curriculum in real time that aligns exactly with all state standards that can incorporate student IEP data, L data, all FERPA protected. And you're building the curriculum that your school wants because it's based on your students' passions, their current needs, their current goals, and they can align exactly with your school's mission and focus as well as at the district level. So one, that's just something I've never seen before. So that's reimagining education, personalizing learning at scale at incredibly reduced costs. That's a game changer. It's things you
Absolutely.
couldn't have done without AI tools like that. And that's obviously one of many amazing tools, but that's the one I saw yesterday, light bulb moments. When he had the QR code up, everyone's taking that picture. When they heard from trusted state superintendents or district level superintendents, you saw it. People said, I want to save 90%. I want my kids to have this experience and save my school money. This makes all the sense in the world. So that's a next in class practice. I want to give a lot of praise and recognition to Ken Shelton. So he's a renowned speaker. He was the keynote speaker at yesterday's AI summit. Again, he just I would not want to even, it wouldn't do me justice to paraphrase some of the things he said yesterday, but the main thing I took away from it is we really need to move slowly together to accomplish some of these audacious goals in addressing inequity. But also that like disrupting for the sake of disrupting education isn't purposeful and it doesn't change the outcome. Don't break the system. There are people that are going to be, that you're now going to, be able to walk away from that are going to be left picking up the pieces. Be part of the solution, move slowly, build coalitions like the one I just mentioned in Ohio. Those are things I'm seeing that are really reimagining the state of education through the lens of AI.
Well stated, Brett. And there was just so many strategic sentiments in that answer that people can conceptualize as well as realize in the practice. One of the things that you highlighted, and I want to highlight this, right, is stating what Ken Shelton stated, said, you got to go slow, right? And not being, and you stated too, not being disruptive just to be disruptive in practices, right? And when I define disruption, Brett and Jacob, one of the things that I look at is in three tiers. Disruption is truly changing practices, changing structures, but here's where the critical disruption is, changing mindsets. And this is where AI, that association with AI around changing mindsets and integrating that into a historically traditional legacy model is something that I think that we have to really, as you stated, upskill our leaders and teachers so that they can use a strategic toolkit to infuse AI in a vertical sense in the operating model. Go ahead, Brett, please add on. I know you want to say something.
Yeah, no. So two things. I want to first again credit two of the phrases Ken said yesterday that I wrote down in the moment. One was from legendary UCLA coach John Wooden: "Be quick, but don't hurry." One of his goals. And the other one is AI should move slow and fix things. So I want to make sure I credit those two statements. But two other points you just brought up. One, a really amazing thing. Again, I'm talking about SchoolJoy because so many educators have now embrace things like ChatGPT, Magic School, and those are great for individual teachers. But and when you do that at scale, that could have an impact. But it's to address your point, Michael, it doesn't help if you're not doing it from a top down and it's in silos at schools. We know that that doesn't always change systemically. What I was really impressed by with SchoolJoy was they were very clear. We actually, someone asked, "Can I just get a demo account for myself? I'm a teacher." And he's like, "Yes, but then like you don't have access to the full tool because it's not going to integrate with your students' data." So we have to start at the district level and work down, and that's why he's so actively seeking, really innovative, like-minded district leaders. But what's great about what the district leader said was, "Hey, you don't need to get every teacher on board. Find seven, bring a principal and a couple of your teachers, and make sure they see it. Invest in them first. Then when everyone else sees the amount of time, how much more engaged and fun learning is for those students, and how easy it is, that's when you're going to get buy-in from the greater picture." And the other thing I wanted to mention was, while I am a proponent of top down, you also have to start bottoms up. So I know I've shared this with both of you, but in San Diego at the AI at the air show, co-hosted with GSV, we did get to lead a student AI competition. This was through the leadership of AIEDU and through a grant with Schmidt's Future. They had students create AI assignments using an adaptable AI use policy. So these students presented to an audience of hundreds, and they were the only people in that room. And remember, this is an air show. This is an AI summit focused on educators. And I was fortunate to get to moderate, and I asked the audience, "Has anyone here ever created an assignment using an acceptable use AI policy?" And the only people in that room that could raise their hand were the students. So getting students upskilled with AI literacy, how nuanced, and I even showed you that video, Michael, so I know you're aware of this. They were able to speak so eloquently and nuanced. These are ninth and 10th graders who had never used AI tools like Magic School or ChatGPT before. They immediately saw this could be used in so many great ways. There's so many harmful things, but until you embrace it and try it, you're just speaking theoretical and out of fear. You got to at least try these things at that level, whether it's students, teachers, parents. So just wanted to say it is a top-down, bottoms-up approach, and there's so many different entry points you can get started with. So just wanted to highlight that those are just a few other examples of ways to get started quick with your communities.
And Brett, I'll tell you this, the video that you showed me of the students and to my audience, this was, and correct me if I'm wrong, Brett, this was the first time the students were deeply engaging in different AI tools. And to my audience, wow. And right during the middle of the video, I asked Brett, I had to make sure, are these like 15, 14-year-old kids that are putting this together? And Brett said, absolutely. No adult intervention, facilitation, obviously guidance to provide structure support, but the critical thinking, the conceptual rigor, the heavy lifting came from the students, and it was absolutely incredible. Brett, that interface of AI in student agency is critical with that. And I want to underscore this, Jacob, for you, this question. is that, I consider, like I said, you and Brett gave a great context of strategies that leaders and teachers can employ. This the example, Phi Only Seven. I immediately align that to Everett Rogers' work, his research with the diffusion theory, the extreme innovators, 2.5%. But now I want to get to this level of specificity, Jacob, in the context of matching learning organizations with solutions, right? Brett gave a great example of Schooljoy, CEO Ian Zhu. Shout out to you, Ian. But Jacob, when we're talking about aligning products to accelerating the vision of all, right? There are many ed tech and software companies out there, CEOs that listen to VFE, Jacob, that always refer back to you and your expertise with this. But what advice would you give both incumbent ed tech firms as well as emergent startups to look beyond linear company indicators to total impact of students? Now, Jacob, there's been, a lot of discussions, right? Now being in this world, meeting profit margins, meeting specific revenue. I'm not saying that's not important, but I want to start adding into the conversation, how are we impacting this from an equity excellence standpoint? And how are we ensuring we're improving culturally responsive solutions where now all can be engaged? So, Jacob, help us out, right? Are there any approaches that ed tech firms and startups can leverage to be true disruptors, right, around mindset, practices, and solutions, and be a differentiator to realize all in the AC stage of education?
Great question. And I'm cognizant of something you just said as well, right? We got to make sure we keep the lights on. We got to make sure that employees are employed. We got to make sure we're doing good work. That's how we're able to do more work, right? But Brett and I have this kind of unique skill set where the folks we meet with and the folks we work with, right, we try to focus them on building long-term relationships in every interaction, right? And something that comes to me from a mentor of mine, I'm privileged to just have so many great mentors and old VPs of sales that I still keep in contact to this day. And I'm not sure if it was Paul Kanarak, one of the founders of Princeton Review, or John Small, one of my boss for many years. They pushed me early in my career to really say, like, hey, we want you to go out there and kill it and make great sales. But we want you to build relationships because in 5 years, we're going to work together in some other capacity. And the people you're meeting with now are also going to be people you're going to meet with in 5 years. So it's really, we push a lot of the founders and a lot of the companies we work with. Yes, we want to get to a second meeting. Yes, we want to address needs. Yes, we want to get to the heart of why this person is in education, what brought them to the solution. But like, if you center yourself on long-term relationships, like, then you can be impactful for these leaders for a long time, right? Like one of our great partners in Tom Davis, I'm not sure if that name sounds familiar, right? Like,
Absolutely.
40-year veteran in ed tech, and I always ask him every time we get together, like, how do you know this person? How do you know that person? How do you know this other person? And his response is, I know that person from when they were a teacher, and then they became a counselor, and then they became a principal, and then they became an assistant soup, and now they're running all of San Diego County. And I'm like, yeah, you're playing 3D chess. Like, your relationship matrix is very different, and you've been doing this for a long time. But one thing that I start off most of my calls, I'm sitting on, 10 to 15 Zoom calls a day with founders and working on strategic projects. I generally try to find out who that person is within a couple of minutes of, like, what brought you into ed tech? Like, what brought us to me, you and I sitting together now? Like, give me your background. Like, what impacts you want to make? What, if you do good work and you make sales and the company's able to make an impact, what does that help you do? Everyone's got their own goals, right? Like, for some, it's take their families on vacation. For others, it's pay for private school for their family. Like, whatever that metric of success looks like for everyone, everyone has their own version of it. So if I can get to the bottom of the other person who I'm talking with, what their metric of success is, and it might be, hey, we need to make sure we have 100% attendance. Whatever that looks like for that person, like, if I can get to the bottom of what that looks like for them, then I can kind of anchor all conversations moving forward if it's next week, if it's next year, around that goal of like, hey, you mentioned this. Like, how's it going? I have a solution that might help with this, or it might not. Like, take it, swat it away, no problem. But I think if we can get to the relationship side faster, it just helps that much. It helps build those kind of bridges faster. And I'll tell you, one of as Brett and I, we met at ASU GSV. I was at my first ASU GSV. I didn't know a single person other than Brett on LinkedIn. And Brett said, come hang out. I'm with like 20 people. I'll introduce you to everybody I'm with. And like, forever thankful because this year, complete opposite ASU GSV, helping out with the air show and all this stuff. But, we kind of centered on, we were LinkedIn friends. We said, hey, you seem like a good person. Like, let's chat and like, how do we work together? And now, we spent 6 months or so working through some ideas and like building Edlet and like figuring out, we always get the requests of like, hey, could you go connect me with LA Unified? Could you go connect me with San Diego? Could you let me talk with New York City? And, one thing we realized was over and over again, we love doing that. Just that's our natural, like Brett's the master communicator, right? Like we just love doing that. But what we found over and over again is the social capital of like introducing people over and over again, like it draws your battery similar to your cell phone, right? So how do you do that thoughtfully with the right resources and also have the leaders almost opt into those conversations? And that's kind of, what took us on this journey to really work together a little bit more closely.
Yeah, and Jacob, the level of creativity between you and Brett with that lit, unbelievable, right? Unbelievable. But Jacob, I want to expand upon, and this is going to be a sub question. I want to expand upon something you stated that is so critical, but doesn't get enough attention: relationships, right? And obviously, why you and Brett are so revered is because you make everybody feel as if they're one. That relationship, people know that is authentic, Jacob. There's a level of authenticity that I would say leaders, district leaders, can identify immediately within different ed tech companies or different ed tech firms, right? We can read through it as leaders would say. When we talk about authentic relationships, explain what that is and outline it, because I really want the CEOs of ed tech companies and firms that listen to this of how essential relationship building is, firm, school district, CEO representatives, executive teams, superintendents, his or her designees, right? So what does that look like from a level of being real, authenticity in the context of what relationships are?
Yeah, happy to go and also encourage Brett to chime in as, 16-year vet of New York City public schools as well. But what's fascinating, we're doing more coaching with some of the ed tech organizations that sign up for Edlet. And, one thing we always encourage them, and some take us up on it and run with it, and others are a little bit more hesitant on it. But what we found is we push them to be a little bit vulnerable.
Yeah,
Like,
absolutely.
why are you spending 60, 70, 80 hours a week working in your business? What impact, like, what indication did you get that this was a good idea? Was this to solve your own need? Was this to solve a need from somebody you work with? Like, be vulnerable. Like, why did you start this? What
Wow.
impacts are you having? Who are you already working with? I mean, taking one step back, we're still going down the journey of like building rapport and sales 101, but we're doing it thoughtfully in a, you know what? This is what we do. This is the impact we're having. Here's our data. Here's all of our other folks we work with. We encourage you to reach out to them. And like, we want to hear if they're also not happy, right? Like, these are things that we want to hear right away so we can make sure we adjust our launch plant, right? But I think the vulnerability side from a person who's building in the edtech space is huge. And that's hard too, right? Nobody wants to come in and say, like, hey, if I don't sell you, I might not be in business next year. Like, we might not talk next year. That's a tough conversation to have. But if we can kind of get them to the rapport side of the house of why they built this, what impact they're looking to have, and also like what the solution is really good at. And also, hey, these are the things we're also still working on, and we want to partner with you to make sure we get it right.
Yeah. And you know, Jacob, you don't hear in a synergistic manner vulnerability and ed tech together, right? You don't hear that. And I'm really appreciative of that because we talk about in education all the time, right? A level of vulnerability, relationships come before rigor and relevance. I mean, we always say we got to get to know our kids, but when we talk about relationships in the ed tech context, then vulnerability really hasn't been brought into the conversation. I'm glad that you and Brett are having these conversations with ed tech firms and solutions so they know the purpose and they're underscoring why. Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you for that. But Brett and Jacob, this is a question for both of you to answer, right? And just going to highlight some of the concerns, right? You know, some of the major concerns with emerging technologies and generative tools is keeping in consideration the impact with historically excluded groups. I really want to focus on this because this is, Brett has said this at the outset, equity and AI, right? As many solutions are moving through various MVP stages, minimal viable product stages and cycles and beta testing for improvement. Jacob or Brett, how do we remind these ed tech providers to keep excellence and equity at the forefront with product development, right? So that we know that they're having an impact on our most, I like to say, historically excluded, instead of saying marginalized, but historically excluded student groups in the education sector. So Jacob or Brett, both of you, I want you both of you to answer this, but either or can go first.
Okay. So first of all, this is to me still the biggest issue. You know, again, 16 years in New York State Department of Education, working at some of those schools you described, the most extreme versions of those. Here's my hopes of how EdTech continues to be more thoughtful and inclusive. One, I've said this to CEOs that are doing amazing work in the field of EdTech and have great solutions. I need you to look back at who's on your C-suite team when you have meetings that are making big
Oh,
decisions
wow.
that are affecting students. Look in that room. If it is not diverse and it's not representative of the market you are trying to serve, and I mean that in the educator space and I mean that in the students, change that immediately. And I've shared this with you, Michael, so I feel comfortable saying this on a larger scale. Find
Absolutely.
former education leaders who are innovative, who always are thinking about the right ways to be more inclusive and equitable, like yourself, but carve out roles for them as advisors. You should not be putting educational solutions in front of students that haven't been vetted and blessed by truly innovative and equity-driven education leaders. They had to have served in that seat at some point. So again, look at your C-suite. If you don't have someone like that, hire a consultant immediately, or even better, hire those people to be part of your organizational C-suite level folks. Number two, if you are not a former educator and you've never been in the classroom other than as a student at some point in your life, make sure you are hiring consultants or putting people on your team that can have that experience serving diverse communities. Please do not assume you know how to do that because you were once a student, potentially many years ago. And three, students, build authentic voice from students, build MVPs, and then get it in front of students for free. Make sure you're accrediting that school for being innovative. Somehow make sure they're benefiting as a result, but get it in front of students and get real data and feedback from the students you ultimately hope to serve. Gonna definitely highlight one of someone we all know is an amazing superintendent right now, Barb Mullen. I have heard her say loudly, proudly, over and over again, and I don't know if it's getting through to people yet. Do not come to me with a final product. Do not come to me in EdTech as an EdTech leader with a final product. You haven't addressed our issues. You haven't listened to my issues. How can you tell me you have my solutions? So again, the more you're able to do that before you come to organ districts and say out loud, we want to show you that we've listened to people that serve students similar to yours. And then once you can analyze that, I hope then it leads to you establishing credibility. And now we can really start at a baseline of you can trust that we're trying our best and we're here to listen and get even better at it. The last thing I want to say about that is one of the things that we do highlight at EdLit and that is so important is it's great that you now take the advice from current education leaders, right? I'm saying that, but I also want to make sure I'm saying something else really clearly. Those people are incredibly busy doing the incredibly hard work, right? They have a much harder job than we in our current roles do. So recognize that. So one of the things we are so crystal clear at EdLit is we make sure that for that time that we put leaders together with EdTech leaders, that we are giving a donation back to each of those districts or nonprofits of those ed leaders' choice because their time is valuable. They're interacting with you, hopefully so that you create a better product that serves more students that are typically excluded from these discussions and from these outcomes. But you ultimately might raise a large sum of money and be highly profitable. And that's great because that's your mission, but that's not the mission of the ed leader. The mission of the ed leader is to give you that time so that you make a better solution for students like theirs and specifically their students and educators. So you better figure out a way to show that you value their time ethically. So donate back to that school, create a scholarship for those students. Do something meaningful for that community that shows your values are more important than your bottom line.
That is a 101. That is a 101 answer. Jacob, please follow up with that. Wow. I tell you, both of you are going to make me create a new product.
Hey, nothing would bring us joy. Let's collaborate together. But you know what's fascinating to me? What really kind of makes Brett special and, you know, send him some praise is, you know, anytime I'm thinking about, you know, putting together an email for a founder or sending out a message to one of the districts we work with, like, I love Brett's take on things because he's the educator in the room, right? Spending 16 years at the district. And on my end, right, I spent 16 years sewing, right, for McGraw-Hill, C2 Education, Varsity, you name it, some of the biggest players, also startups. But, you know, it was fascinating to me over those 16 years, right? I was a sales rep and I was given a solution and they told me, go out and figure it out and sell it, right? Like, I wasn't able to sit and develop the product. I wasn't able to sit with that leader and say, like, does this fit your need? Or, like, did we build something that doesn't really make sense? And, you know, one person that really comes to mind that I, you know, Brett and I love to give some praise out to folks that are doing good work. Matt at Frenalytics comes to mind. Both Brett and I have had the privilege to work with him for the last 18 months. He's a sponge, right? Like, we talk to him and he's like, that's a great idea. Like, I'll get back to you guys tomorrow with action items from this. Or like he meets somebody and he's like, I think I learned this. Like, is this worthwhile? And like, that is the best type of leader to work with, right? Also, he has a best in class sped solution, right? Like, he's winning awards. He's having huge partnerships with New York City. Like, these are the folks that like get it, right? They're not in it for short-term gains. They're looking at the meetings they have, they're looking at the educators and saying like, we might not work together right now, but there's a world where in 6 months, in 6 years, we're going to be great friends and we're going to make huge impact. And I think like, you know, shout out to him for being a sponge and really being coachable because that doesn't always happen with the leaders we work with.
Yeah, and I'm really appreciative that A, you're giving a lot of people shout-outs. That just talks about the leadership that you, Jacob and Brett, display consistently with your individual and collective clients, which absolutely love. And to my audience, that was a answer. And Jacob and Brett, I always say this for every episode. I use this as a professional learning tool and asynchronous mechanism for leaders within the ecosystem to be able to go back and play some of the responses or the answers and use that to integrate into their practices. Both of your answers, it creates that what I like to see or what I see from both of you is the successful interface to be able to accelerate, right? Accelerate how we get to achieve each student to reach that utopia of all. To my audience, that answer is an interfaced answer where you're getting the best of both worlds in this kind of like this one conglomerate. So please play that back over and over again. Brett and Jacob, I counted roughly, and both of you guys know I have an analytical mind. I counted 9 different strategies that can be used in a siloed and across silo context. So to my audience, you know what I'm talking about. That was one of the answers that I'm actually going to go back and replay to put into my practices. So this one, Jacob and Brett, is a toss-up. I don't care who takes this one, right? And usually the toss-up are the hardest questions. You know that. So you guys got to figure out who's going to take this. But if both of you answer, perfectly fine. But from either of your lens, right, with the, and I got this this data metric from the Oxford study that was released during COVID, where there's an estimation of 47% of jobs are going to be automated by 2035, right? And we're seeing now by, I believe it was 2035 as well, we're going to see roughly close to 1.9 new million jobs in the areas of computer science, AI science, and IT, right? So we see these schools or we see districts, right, developing portraits of a learner, profiles of a learner, different contextual meaning within each of their districts, but pretty much the fundamentally the same thing. But when we talk about the new world demands that we're seeing, we're seeing a huge economic shift, especially now AI revolutionizing every single industry in the world. So when districts are starting to create this profile of a learner, this portrait of a graduate, right, we have to articulate or design that for 22nd century demands. So as we start doing that, right, around the skill development focus, how should districts take this development of a portrait of a graduate, profile of a learner, so that now they'll be in more of alignment with the economic demands as well as the future demands of work in the world. So Brett or Jacob, whoever wants to take that.
Okay. So I'm again really fortunate. This past month has felt so busy, but I'm so blessed that like when you get to go to really great summits or sessions, you better leave with like the knowledge there, right? If you're putting in the time, especially if you spend time with your family. So big shout out to Byron Sanders. Byron Sanders is one of the most
Yes.
amazing speakers I've ever heard. And I was fortunate enough that he was the keynote speaker at the Urban Assembly SEL Symposium here in New York last week, last Friday, actually. So what's so important to me when we talk about a portrait of a graduate is we know the skills are going to continue to change, right? That's a fact. We know AI is here. So what Byron shared is the shift from an economic perspective, because his whole thing, and it's brilliant, is there's going to be all these culture wars, depending on where you live in the country, around certain skills and how you talk about them, right? So the terminology is crucial. You have to know where you are, right? You have to know the game in order to get the right skills to the students. But what
Yes.
he showed me was that McKinsey from 2015 to 2020, in a 5-year shift, this is 2020. So now, I mean, that's already 4 years ago. Creativity and social emotional skills now dominate the list of the most highly desired job skills. So I'm just reading something. That's why I'm looking at my phone. So I took a picture of a slide. Complex problem solving is still number one. Critical thinking's next. Creativity is number three. Coordinating with others, people management and emotional intelligence are four, five, and six. So I just want to really highlight that for folks, right? We often hear that AI is going to automate things. And that's true. And, I love to use a term similar to like AI can bring out the humanity in us, right? I've been on calls with both of you, right? I got a no catcher going so I can be walking on a treadmill and be fully present. I'm not typing. I'm not on my phone. I'm present. I'm with you all. And for students, those EQ, EI, those interpersonal skills, that's going to turbocharge AI because you still need to put that humanity into whatever tool or product you're going to ultimately go with. So I just want to flip that real quick. So one, I hope I answered it correctly in that it's so cool that you put those SEL character traits, right? I'm paraphrasing Byron, whatever terminology is most in vogue in your community, but we're all agreed this is what businesses are saying they need, right? It's not us, it's not the educator. This is what business wants students to leave equipped to do moving forward. And that's already 4 years ago. And we know AI wasn't as prominent then as it is now. But what I also want to shout out is something I've seen. I'm going to call it profile of a learner, but it's profile of an educator, right? Mm-hmm. So big shout out to a couple people that are doing really innovative, and I say disruptive in the most positive way. One is Youssef over at Playlab, Mike Yates over at TFA Reinvention, and Marlon Styles, former Amazing Soup, and now he's doing great work with Learning Cyber Collaborative and other innovative things. But the reason I'm bringing them up is I've seen them put the joy back in education through things like Playlab, through Reinvention Lab, through district leadership coaching. And I just want to again say, like, I've seen people use Playlab. I've seen first-year teachers use it and, like, a sense of, like, oh, my gosh, I can do this job again. I've seen late, late career district leaders use it and show off their tool with a sense of enthusiasm that, like, I just don't always see in education. I know a lot of people at that age in their career that are telling me how many days they have left to retire. That was not the conversation after Playlab. They're telling me how they're helping people in a way they never thought they could at scale and quicker and more efficiently. So, so important to bring the joy back to learning. So important to bring joy back to the educator side. And all of those skills I just said as a profile of a learner, we need to figure out how to also bring that in to the educational professional development we're bringing in alongside AI. How are you humanizing this profession and taking things off people's plate and not adding more things to their plate when you give them a tool that could authentically personalize learning, make learning more efficient? How are you making life more fun for them so they are building connections with those students, those relationships, and now showing that joy and love that we know is what really is at the forefront of education?
Such a great answer, Brett. Brett, I want to expand on a couple of statements. I think these are critical themes that I want to just be able to expand upon. But I love the aspect of individuals that you brought up. Shout out to Byron. He's one of my fraternity brothers, one of the amazing educators in our country. Michael Yates. I mean, all the individuals, Marlon, great, great, great individuals. Portrait of, or I should say profile of an educator. So critical. So critical. I think that we need to have that profile, portrait of graduate profile, and that profile of an educator run as synonymous. And the new, as you know, Brett, I was in. Brett, thank you for being a part of my feedback group, right? Of my ideation group around my platform. And my platform with Brett, you know, provided the feedback. That's what Jacob was talking about, right? Understanding, getting to know that purpose and the why. But, you know, that's that whole portrait feeds into a portrait of a system that I'm creating with that platform. But Brett, I want you to expand on something that is still, and again, I'm thinking about it from an analytical sense, a logical sense of where education is going today, right? And you highlighted that, you know, creativity and these emotional intelligence skills are so critical. Now, when I think of EI, and you know how polarized it is in education, and I just need, and I've been asking this question because I've been challenging and interrogating individuals that challenge SEL. With 57% within the next two years, 57% of public education, charter education as well, is going to be Black and brown. Some of the essential skills for the 22nd century falls into the categories and the domains of SEL. They're needed skills. They're needed skills, right? Why is it so polarized, Brett? Equity is so polarized, but when we talk about equity, substitute it with the word excellence, we still want to reach all. So why would essential skills for our economy that are embedded within this EI domain that is needed for the future of work and the future of the world, why has it become so politicized and polarized where we can't even talk about these skills that students need to survive in their natural world?
Okay. So first, always going to recognize there are so many more people that are much more qualified and positioned to speak to this, both from their expertise, their lived experience. But I want to share something I did hear at the SEL symposium last week from a student. And so I'm going to start here because I think this goes back to what you're asking, but then I'll obviously expand upon it. So one, it seems so obvious, but a student got this great ovation for saying something, again, so obvious around SEL work and some of these competencies. Is you don't know what your student really wants until you actually hear them out. So one, the fact that that needs to still be said by a student to a room full of education leaders and educators and SEL experts, not that they weren't with it, but like, that's so obvious, right?
Right.
Student voice has to be part of education and policy and larger decision making. But, you know, Michael, to what you said, I do think the pivot needs to be finding common ground to where people who are already, for whatever reason, opposed to this cultural idea of SEL. There's a number of reasons, right? They're historical. It's inherent bias. It's race. It's culture. It's so many different viewpoints. But ultimately, it comes down to, in my opinion, control, right? What's working now is working for a set group of people. And any change that acknowledges that, you know, though there's inequity, is a threat to the status quo. So, like, that's just, you know, basics. I know we can all acknowledge that, that's the why. But what do you do with that? And this is where, again, people much more prominent and much more respected in this field than I am could go much deeper. And I hope you find those folks like David Adams. So he can preach on this. And actually, I want to give praise to someone out in Ohio, Shannon Cox. She's the superintendent of Montgomery County. She led this. She's doing this amazing thing called CELA with SEL and ELA combined, and incredible work she's doing, and has built a whole curriculum. So you can't say SEL and ELA are not together. But right, what she said and what Byron said and every speaker there says is, know your audience and you need to pivot, right? Because if you want to start saying these are not SEL skills, these are economic skills, right? This is our, how are we going to make sure every student has a pathway to middle class prosperity or has a pathway to, you know, transformational wealth? It starts with these skills. And so if you start transitioning them into quote unquote life skills or financial skills, you map it to what the Economic Mobility Forum is saying. These are the standards you need to succeed in the future. Remove the barrier. And we know what the barrier is, but you can't, when you actually go to parents and say, do you want your child to be able to do this? And you turn it into a real life thing. So again, saying EQ, saying SEL, those are hot button issues in America. Saying to a parent / superintendent, hey, you know, when you go to the grocery store, imagine your kids working there. Do you want them to know like how to interact with someone in a positive but not back down way when they might have a customer who's rude? Yeah. Hey, if you're the local business owner, do you want me to like train my kids? Yeah, please do that. That would save me so much time. On the opposite side, when your kid's at the counter, do you want them to know how to interact with, unfortunately, maybe a rude person? Okay, great. Like, whatever we're going to call those skills, that's such a baseline thing we all have to deal with every day. Get people to acknowledge, like, yes, I want kids. And also, again, and I'll get up the soapbox and we'll pivot, but like, the idea that what always really frustrated me as a leader was I built a 4-year advisory curriculum, and whatever that skill was, soft, hard, write a college essay or give an elevator pitch, everyone would acknowledge we needed it. And when I'd say, well, who's teaching it right now in our school? Right now, no one. Where should it live? I don't know. Okay. So first acknowledge what the skills we want our kids to do is, and that's what a more of a portrait of a graduate is, getting to those like tactile things. But then build larger community around, hey, let's figure out what we're calling this so that everyone in the community agrees this is what we should be investing in. And this is how you then get local communities, business leaders to be like, hey, I want your kid to have an internship because we want them to try out, again, whatever we're calling it, community values, doesn't matter. Yeah. But get people all agreed that you want kids learning certain things that you as the educator know they need to succeed in life. End of rant.
Thank you. No, Brett, thank you for that, because you know, just I remember I had a conversation. It was actually David Adams and I, we were just on a Zoom call, talking education as we always do. And we started to unwrap the skills that are embedded within the SEL domains. And as we started doing that, adaptive problem solving, advanced critical thinking around collaboration, goal setting, independent monitoring to set self goals, and all of that, right? Around, and I'm saying to myself, why is this so contentious? Why? So, and then we started going down that road with that. But great answer with that, Brett, and I love it. Economic skills, right? I'm gonna start using that, because EQ, SEL, or It just brings a lot of contention wherever you're at across the country, but economic skills, I think that's where that median is. So, Mr. Jacob Cantor, I'm going to call you, and this is a good one. Eric Gagne, Los Angeles Dodgers closer. You're going to close us out. Now, Brent and I, we're New York guys. We're Mariano Rivera. But, since we're going to close it out in LA, right? We're going to bring it back to the Dodgers' Eric Gagne way. And now, Jacob, don't listen. I usually say, please give people, or my guests usually give three words. Don't stick with three words. I want you to expand on this, brother, okay? Because I want to hear you on this. Last question. What three words, expand on it, do you want our audience to leave with regarding the creation of, and we're starting to hear this phrase. This is kind of a new phrase that we're hearing in education, right? Sustainable learning environments. We can even substitute environments for sustainable learning ecosystems in the AC stage to adequately prepare our students, your kids, my kids, Brett's kids, Generation Z, and Generation Alpha.
All right. I'll take the Ohtani role. Gagne, great player. But I'm going to start it off with I'm very lucky that my parents moved to America from the Soviet Union when I was five, right? So like if your audience and anyone's listening, anybody watching, as we're talking about equity, as we're talking about opportunity for students, as we're talking about like living the American dream, like I'm doing that, right? Like from Kiev to Los Angeles, and now in a position raising kids, and like I'm living the American dream. So, credit to my parents for moving us. But, like, I think that's what drives these words that I'm gonna give you in a second, where like I'm living the dream, right? Like, my parents both worked. They said, here's the keys to the house, you're a latchkey kid. We're gonna go make sure we pay rent and make sure we have food. Like, your responsibilities are your homework's done, you take a bath, and don't get into any trouble. And like that's why sports became such a pivotal part of my life, right? Because they kept me on the straight arrow. The first word that comes to mind is inspiration. Seek out leaders who inspire you on your journey, right? We're all on our own path and our own journey, and we all have our own goals and what success looks like to us, right? Like I have a different mentor. As we're giving shout outs, Jeremy Brown, not in education, actually in real estate. And he was a fraternity brother of mine at Cal State Northridge. And, again, we have like these pivotal points where people see something in us that we don't even see in ourselves. And when I was 23, 24, 25, he luckily for me saw something in me and said, you know what? Like, I'm going to give you 1,000 audiobooks. And you're going to listen to these. You might not listen to them now. You might not listen to them next year, but eventually, like, something in you is going to click and you're going to like be thirsty for knowledge. And like, so inspiration, right? For me, like, one of my favorite books is Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. Whatever you think of that title, just written in the tw 1920s, it's 2024 now. Like, the lessons in that book can apply for the next 100 years, right? I'm also a nerd for podcasts. I feel like, Brett knows West Coast time. He'll get like a podcast recommendation from me at like 9:30 at night, my time, and he's sleeping. But really, seek out podcasts, right? Like your podcast, like our friends at EdTech Insiders with what Ben and Alex does, right? Like they're having Sam Altman on, they're having Hillary Clinton, they're having like Sal Khan on. Like those are great conversations to really listen to and really get inspired from. The next word that comes to mind is vulnerability. We talked about that a little, right? Like, if you can truly get on with somebody and get to their why and what impact you're trying to make, I think that will just build much deeper, longer lasting relationships. And then you start playing, I'm going to say this not in a bad way, but like, then you start playing 3D chess and you think like, 5 years down the line, I don't know how I'm going to work with you now, but like you're a good person, you're doing great work. I don't know the path forward yet, but like I would love to talk to you more somehow, right? Like I don't know the path forward yet, but let's stay in touch and let's figure out a way to make larger impact. And the third word that comes to mind, and I hope this doesn't leave your audience with like, a bad taste in their mouth with this podcast is charlatan. I was recently on with my friend Aaron Mote from EdSafe AI and Innovate EDU. We were just doing a debrief on ASU GSV. We were both on the Airshow Council, so just doing a debrief call about what was got her really excited there, what things needed some more work, and we got to chatting. And earlier in the day, that word got used in something I read, and then her and I were chatting about it, and it got us to think about COVID times. Right? There was $180 billion in the system during COVID. There was a lot of solutions that were purchased on the idea that they were going to be impactful for students. A lot of those solutions are sitting on the shelf, never got used, never got implemented. There was no metric of success. And I understand also that it was COVID time and everybody was scrambling to just get resources in the hands of students and families and teachers. So I'm cognizant of that as well. But as we're looking at the discussion we had around AI, around the folks that, back to the first word, that give us inspiration, let's make sure we elevate those folks that are truly doing the work, making an impact. And also, it's not their first year doing this, right? They've been living it, right? This is just a new tool that's helping amplify the work they're doing. And I also say that with there's amazing people that have only been in the space for 1 year, like me, like literally like 1 year using AI, right? So I say that as not the metric of looking at somebody if they're successful, if we should take guidance from them, but really looking at the impact and the message. And one last shout out to Dr. Bond, former superintendent in Arizona and in California, right? He's doing some AI talks at the governor level all across the country. And I think he's really having some impactful conversations similar to you, right? Former superintendent that's talking about it, not from hey, this tool can get your kids 3 points on their MAP score, but no, actually, let's look at this from the IEP stance.
Absolutely.
You could use this to shave an hour off of every single IEP you have to write. So if you are a speech therapist or think about 1 hour per student per caseload, and what does that time unlock? Does that unlock yoga? Does that unlock family time? Does that unlock reading outside? Whatever your metric of downtime is, let's unlock that for more people. That's where I think AI is going to be the most impactful. So I think that's where Dr. Bond is having a lot of success, right? Traveling across the country and saying, these are the challenges I had as a superintendent. Look at these tools, and this is how I would use them with my teachers and encourage my teachers to do X, Y, and Z. And imagine
Absolutely.
if they all did that. What would they do with this extra 20 hours? Could we solve the teacher shortage, the teacher burnout, that like you name it, right? There's endless amounts of challenges that are out there, but really, how do we elevate those folks that are truly doing good work and not have the level of charlatan that I feel like COVID brought? And again, there was great solutions too, right? This wasn't a every single person had a solution that was negative, but there were some out there, right? There were some opportunistic folks, and I don't think that ever goes away. But that word came to mind to kind of close us out as let's make sure the folks we're elevating are truly, truly doing the work. And shout out to you and what you're doing here, and having Brett and I on, right? We're grateful to you and excited to see your journey as well.
Absolutely. No, Brett and Jacob, you've been supporting my journey and just love everything that both of you are doing. I can tell you this, this episode it brings back a quote from one of my professors at Harvard, Kareem Lakhani. He always says, AI won't replace humans, but humans with AI will replace humans without AI. And that still resonates with me 100% after today. I think we covered everything in totality. There's more that needs to be ideated around and iterated, but I think that what we covered today really covers a good chunk of the operating model within education. And I wanted to do that purposely because of the expertise that both of you bring to the ecosystem. And thank you for everything that you do. Now, to my audience, Jacob and Brett, if they want to get in contact with you or want to find out more about Edlit, how should my audience get in contact with you via email, social media?
Yeah, so if they wanted more info on Edlit, how we basically pair solution providers with district leaders, they can go to edlit.org, EDLIT.org. I mean, Brett, if you're good with it, you could also shoot us an email. I'm jacob@edlit.org, brett@edlit.org. We're also very active on LinkedIn, so find us there, no worries. I feel like I respond to every single person that sends me a message. No hard time finding us, that's for sure. But please reach out if we can be of assistance.
I tell you, to my audience, yes, reach out to Brett and Jacob. They will establish a strong relationship with you. They will want to know who you are, what problems you're trying to solve in the ecosystem. But two, these are two of the best that are out there. Jacob and Brett, it means a lot to me that both of you came on. I got the AI experts now on this, so truly appreciative. I know your schedules, your calendars are packed, but just to make time for this recording means so much to me. So thank you for that, Brett and Jacob. And on that note, onward and upward, everybody. Have a great evening.